Hello, RSC. This is Caleb Meek Bradley, and I really think that you guys should write all the great video games abridged, because video games are awesome, and also mostly just because I think Austin looks a lot like Mario, if you were like if he had a mustache. So yes, you should write that, and forget whatever it is you actually are writing. Yep. Okay. Actually, don't forget what you're writing. It's probably going to be better. Woo. Okay. Keep up the hilarious work. Bye.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 126, Audiences Talk Back. Hi. It is strangely quiet here at the Reduced Shakespeare Company this week, this first week of May in the year of our Lord 2009. Our spring tour is over, and we won't start touring again in America until September. Our UK tour is over, and we're not exactly sure when we're going to be able to tour the UK again, although the wheels are turning. It all has to do with the global economic meltdown. Maybe you've heard about it, and the values of the dollar and the pound, both of which have seen better days. We have a possible foreign gig this summer that I'm dying to tell you about, but I have to wait to hear whether that's officially on or not, and when it is, I will let you know. And we have some very cool gigs happening both this fall and next spring that we're really looking forward to. And as soon as those dates get written in pen rather than pencil, I'll be able to tell you about those. So it's strangely quiet from a performance standpoint, but there will be lots of scribbling and typing this summer. Reed Martin and I are going to be writing our next stage show this summer, which will be the Reduced Shakespeare Company's seventh stage show. Now, we know what it's going to be, and we'll officially announce it in June, but we'd love to hear your guesses about what you think it's going to be, and also your suggestions about what you think our next stage show should be. You heard David Meek Bradley's suggestion there at the top of the podcast. Please feel free to send us your own guesses and suggestions via all the methods I'll tell you about at the end of the podcast. And even if your suggestion isn't our next stage show, it's still quite possible that it could be our future stage show. So talk back to us. In fact, this week's podcast is all about you talking back to us. At recent performances in both Springfield, Illinois, and San Diego, California, we had special post-show talkbacks with the audiences who asked great questions that Reed Martin, Matt Croke, Dominic Conti, and I did our best to answer. So who has a question? Yeah, yes, sir.
The question was the interaction with the audience. Was that part of the original idea, or has that evolved over time? It's actually a holdover from the Renaissance Fair days, yeah?
Yeah. In the Renaissance Fair days, I think they tried to recreate, what the Globe was like in London in Shakespeare's time, where there was a lot of, interaction between the audience. Latecomers is something that doesn't happen every show, but it happens frequently. We have a lot of things like that are tangents that we've worked together long enough. It doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes it won't happen for months, but when it shows up, we do it. He's got to follow.
And the key, the key is keep it real. We don't like to force it. If the audience can see it, we have to acknowledge it. I don't know if it was planned. I'm not. If the ushers did, good job. But they people came in my row. I had to get up out of my seat. Right. I don't know if that's originally how it was planned. We didn't hook up with them. So if they can see it, we have to acknowledge it. Or if someone gets up to go to the bathroom, we've stopped the show. Sometimes we sat down and said, "Well, wait." And we just sit there.
We also had another bit that we sometimes do to the latecomers. But the Moe's party and Moe, Larry, and Curly had gotten such a big response. We all kind of looked at each other and went, "Let's just move on."
Yeah.
We didn't think we could top it. You had another follow-up.
We saw the show in London. The show started with a cast member being in the audience.
Yeah, that's the Shakespeare show, yeah. Okay. Well, in the Shakespeare show, we get an audience member up to play Ophelia in Hamlet. Yeah, in Hamlet. And then we get another guy up to play Ophelia's ego, and we do this Jungian psychology, Jungian analysis. That's what happens in that. Yeah.
The Shakespeare show we had put to bed in about 2001 or two, but we're bringing it back next season for the first time in about 7 or 8 years, so that'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Who else had a question? Right here? Yeah.
I'd like to introduce you to Amy right here.
Amy from Warwickshire. That's awesome. Thanks for coming all this way. You win.
Yes.
Do you have a question?
Actually, I do. About
okay.
The show tonight.
Yeah.
What's your favorite point in history?
What's our favorite point in history? Anybody have a favorite point in history?
Wow.
Well, people sometimes ask when, you know, is there a period in history you'd like to live? Yeah, now. Yeah. I've always kind of had an affinity for the 50s. I mean, I was alive only for a month of it. But
what were hula hoops like?
I liked
what were coonskin caps like?
Yeah, I liked Ike.
Well, we're talking about it today because the Lincoln Museum, you know, beautiful museum, and we're talking about other travels. Benjamin Franklin and Phil, that whole part of history is just really quite fascinating.
I just wish I lived in an era where people wore hats, where men wore hats. I have a good head. I have a good head for hats. Who else?
Well, I had a question. I noticed you did some Blagojevich and some Obama. Do you update your show, like, depending on where you're going to be or the current events?
Do we update our show depending on where we're going to be?
It's so funny. When we wrote the show in 93, we did Blagojevich jokes, and he wasn't even in office, so it was really, it was the weirdest thing. Nobody, and Obama, nobody heard of him.
And we
yes,
get
we
in.
Do. The answer is yes, we do.
Yeah. Well, and this is, we say that this is the show, that this is our hardest show to do because they keep writing American history, so we keep having to reduce it, you know? So we keep having to bring it more up to date.
But even in the Bible show and in the other shows, the Bible, we have the rejected top 10 commandments, so, you know, number 10, thou shalt not sell a Senate seat for, we would do, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we'd get it in.
Do we ever
No, we've never portrayed George W. in the show.
Yeah.
We talked George W.?
George W. Bush. Used to be the Q&A.
Oh, of course we did. Oh, duh. Excuse me. Yes.
Whoever is the president is the Q&A. So it used to be until November. George W. Bush took questions
from the audience,
and then after the election, it's Barack takes the questions. Yeah,
and I'm not saying I did anything great tonight, but it's kind of the same thing. I, you know, Barack Obama, it's a hard thing to do. We get a lot of students who beat themselves up sometimes over, oh, I got, you know what. It's the relationship. You try to say, all right, I don't do a great impression. I got a silly wig.
I don't think you fooled anybody with your Obama.
He fooled me.
But you just go out. You interact with them. I mean, you keep it real. And you know, like the latecomer, same thing. If you know a question, you answer it. If you don't, you know. And then that's the trick to all that kind of nuanced stuff.
And those ears really look good on you.
Thank you.
And the ears look good, yeah. Have we had to dumb down the act for our audiences? Interesting question.
You know, lack of American, you know, awareness of American history as we go through the years from when we began and
well, we got some good advice when we started to write this show. This sort of the dean of English theater critics came to see the Shakespeare show and took us out for lunch, and he wrote us a valentine of the review in the Times of London, and we said, yeah,
and our publicist said, oh, well, this must be a mistake.
Yes, he couldn't be the guy, and he couldn't be liking you, and she became our ex-publicist. And so we said, we're writing the show and we don't know how to approach it, you know, do we try to write what we think other people are going to find. He said, write what is funny to you. That way you don't have to second guess yourself. Now, when we write a show, we write at least half as much again as ends up in it eventually, and we take it out on the road for a month or two or six, right, and hone it and hone it and hone it. So we write what's funny to us, and then we find out what's funny to everybody else, and what's only funny to us, we jettison. But we have to keep in mind, we try to appeal to a wide audience. And we also are very popular not only in America, we're popular in England, Ireland, Belgium, Holland. And so when we're investing several years of our lives in a show, we try to think, can we write? Now, the America show, is the exception. It doesn't really play so much overseas. But we've done very well with it here.
Well, and the other thing is, we have discovered that in the last couple of years, the Reagan scene and the Nixon scene, you know, with high school students, they know the old presidents, but they don't know the recent old presidents, you know? So we actually, you know, I do think that there's going to be, we have rewritten the Reagan scene to include George Bush Sr., and I suspect there's going to be, you know, as time passes on, those scenes will shrink and we'll get, you know, another scene. And yeah.
Do you guys do mostly improv? Or is it more like memorized lines?
It's written and rehearsed and scripted, but a lot of times
100% written and scripted before we go into rehearsal.
Right.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Yeah, but before we go into rehearsal. But then in rehearsal, we'll often go, what if we tried this? You know, what if this, you know, and we'll improvise in rehearsal to go, is this better than what we wrote? And then sometimes what will happen when we're first putting a show up on its feet, something will happen. Somebody will forget a line, a mistake will be made, and we'll go, wow, that was hysterical. Can we recreate that mistake every night? So we will discover things by accident. But generally, we don't use a lot of improv. Obviously, when we take questions from the audience, that's all improvised.
Latecomers is all improv. Reed's gun breaking, that never happened. It wasn't improv, but that my cigarette falling, that was just a bad prop. It's not improv, but it's, you know, that never happened.
Yeah, just telling the truth.
Yeah, and sometimes a lot of bits, yeah, I guess what he's saying is a lot of bits might start as improv, and if we like them, then we say, can we recreate it and make it look like it's happening for the first time every night?
True improvisers don't like to recreate it every night. They want to make it fresh every night. They want to do something completely new every night. So it's our challenge as actors is to make it look as if we're improvising it.
Because we got
to
keep the pace up. You don't want to take advantage. I mean, people got, you know, places to go. 10 o'clock at night. I mean, you have to keep the show. You hit its points and move on. It's very important.
How do we sustain the energy is the question. Well, sometimes we don't is the
answer. Yeah. I eat a Pop-Tart right before and gulp a Dr. Pepper.
Hi, this is Rebecca, also known as Reflex22 on the message boards, and I'm from New York, and I've been a fan of the Reduce Shakespeare Company since about 11th grade, and I'm graduating college now, so however long that is. And you're listening to the Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast.
It's time for RSEQ and A.
We got another great voice message this week.
When are you coming to Oregon? We'd love you to come to Eugene, Oregon. Please call the Holt Center. And we'd love to see you, honestly. You came here several years ago, and we loved you. So please come back really, really soon.
Well, of course, we'd love to come back to Oregon, and we've played Oregon many times over the years. It has been a while, though. Now, I don't know who actually sent us that voicemail. She didn't leave us her name. I don't think she works for the Holt Center there in Eugene, which is a beautiful facility. But if you are listening to this, you should call the Holt Center and tell them to bring us in. It really, really works wonderfully well when fans call the venues and say, you know who you should bring in? You should bring in those Reduce Shakespeare Company guys. They're pretty funny. That helps a lot. But we will be pursuing the Holt Center and other places in Oregon as we put together next year's tour and future tours. And now back to more audience talkbacks with Reed, Matt, Dominic, and myself.
Yeah.
No, in fact, sometimes it's very much like a job.
Yeah.
You know, and we have to kind of, in fact, be perfectly honest, we were standing back there and we were listening to the opening announcement at the very top of the show and we heard very quiet laughs from you guys. And we went, oh, God. You guys warmed up nicely, very nicely.
Well, it's the sort of thing where sometimes we might be tired and the audience is lively and the audience will liven us up. Sometimes we're, you know, full of vim and vigor and the audience is quiet. We energize them. Sometimes both are great. Sometimes both are kind of down. But it's hard for us not to have a pretty good time, you know, telling jokes and having, you know, hundreds of people laugh at us.
Yeah. Even if they're laughing quietly. I mean, most of the time we won't sit here on the stage. We'll go out to the lobby and sign autographs and shamelessly hawk our merchandise. And even on the quietest audiences, you know, where we're grumbling, oh, those quiet bastards, da, 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 they come out and they go, this is the nicest show, funniest show we've ever seen. So we love talking to the people afterwards because then we get a real sense of what the audience response was.
Yeah.
Do you ever work with the school districts?
Do we work with school districts? We don't generally tend to work with elementary and high school districts. Our feeling is, you know, we prefer that the kids come to the shows with their parents so they see what it's like to attend the theater with real people, not as just a field trip.
But we do workshops. Yeah. Often the theaters will get special grants for outreach. And so on tour, we do a lot of one- and two-nighters at colleges and civic centers. And so in the afternoons, it's not infrequent that we would do workshops on improvisation or clowning or Shakespeare or auditioning.
Some high school workshops, I remember, last year.
It's usually arranged by the theater we're performing in. You know, so when the theater knows they're bringing us in 12, 18 months, they can arrange something with the school districts. You know, we're an equity company. We're required to have auditions every year. And it's hard to find the right actors to do this because they need to be take it seriously without taking themselves seriously. They need to be funny without being,
Without
commenting on it.
And we're sort of trying, a couple of things. The show is 2 hours, but if you're on the road, there's the other 22 hours. So part of the audition is we see them perform, and then we want to hang out with them for a while and see if they seem like they would be pleasant enough to spend months on end with.
If they drive us crazy in a three-minute audition, we go, no matter how good it is.
And the other thing is we try to cast a comedy team. You're casting actors, but actors who can play themselves, be relaxed being themselves, be comfortable with improvisation. And we're looking for types, kind of the hard ass, the drill sergeant, you know, the faux academic, the man child, and people who, you know, different personalities and different looks. Yeah. No skill is required.
There's not a specific skill. We joke that, you know, acting talent is about fourth or fifth on the list of what we're looking for. It's a personality, you know. It's a type. It's definitely a type, you know. Each of us could play the other's part, but it wouldn't be the same.
I always look at an audition, I look for a couple of things. One, do they seem to have a sense of humor and good timing in what they're doing? And just when they're up there, do I like them? Yeah. As an audience member, when somebody comes into the audition, somebody might do a perfectly good audition, I go, it just doesn't do it for me. It's not that they're untalented, but it just doesn't strike me as somebody I want to see.
And they have to be comfortable being themselves or playing an aspect of themselves. You know, some actors like to put on the role, but you don't want to know them when they're in their real persona. You know, we need to have people who are comfortable in their own personas and then can put on roles as well.
Well, the other thing about our show is so many actors get all the classical training, but there's no way in a classroom to practice interacting with an audience. And that's even a hard thing to figure out at an audition, because how do you do that? But you get a sense of it, and the callbacks, you know, we chat with them and see how comfortable they are just relaxing and chatting.
We also ask, as part of our audition, we do, you know, a 30-second or a one-minute comic monologue, and then we ask you to tell us a joke. So it tells us, well, what's your sense of humor like? What joke are you going to pick? How do you tell the joke? Can you just tell a joke? A lot of people will go, they'll act the joke. Well, the Irish priest went down to the... Shut up, dude. Just tell me the joke. You know? I know one thing I look for is on actors' resumes, has this actor worked at a bunch of theaters one time or a bunch of theaters several times at each theater? That always kind of clues me into the fact that, oh, okay, he wasn't hired again at that theater. I wonder what that tells me. John.
You say no skill required, but I've been marveling the last couple weeks of a certain skill. Austin, how do you do the cricket?
If I could teach it, I would know. It's basically just whistling, and it's doing this, and whistling at the same time, and having wet lips.
I can't.
Anyway.
I heard you guys on the radio once, and a guy phoned in and said, will you adopt me?
That was my son, Larry.
I'm wondering if any of you have ever adopted anyone who just followed you home.
We've never adopted anybody last, but you had a really nice experience last night at the table. You autographed your first?
I signed my first boob. You know, I'm not in a rock band, so you know, it doesn't you know, happen all that often. Yeah. But I get the opportunity.
His name was Frank. Yeah.
It's still a boom.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for this week's Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your talkbacks via email to feedback@reduceshakespeare.com. You can also interact with other fans at our website, reduceshakespeare.com. Just click on forum or find us at facebook.com, myspace.com/reduceshakespeare. Become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, our number one fan Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Mary Fagley. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Rebecca, a.k.a. Reflex22, at our Reduce Shakespeare Company forum. If you'd like to do a podcast blurb, send us an MP3 or leave us an RSE voicemail on our podcast page. Tell us who you are, how long you've been a fan, and what you do now, and be sure to finish with, "And you're listening to the Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast," and we'll use it in a future podcast. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 126/378 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.